Hello? Is anybody out there listening to you? Chapter 5 of the Marketing Plan Podcast is now in session.
It's time to transform your business into the brand you've always dreamed it could be. This is the Marketing Plan Podcast. On a straight line between points A and B? No way. Let's jump the tracks and get to point C with Jay Arrett, the Dean of Marketing Know-How.
The objection to conforming to usages that have become dead to you is that it scatters your force. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Clear a new field instead of manuring an old. Do not seek expressions, seek thoughts to be expressed. Henry David Thoreau. Yep, two quotes for the price of one in Chapter 5. I'll illuminate in a bit. By the way, all quotes here on the Marketing Plan Podcast are sourced. I know where they originated, at least to the best of my quote sleuthing ability. The Ralph Waldo Emerson quote is from his 1841 essay, Self-Reliance. The Henry David Thoreau quote is from his personal journal dated Christmas Day, 1851. So reuse them with confidence. Chapter 5 is about communication. Isn't it the most essential element for a good relationship? And remember, our big idea here on the show is that we view the customer as someone we want to have a relationship with. And your marketing message is your main line of communication with potential customers. If you're frustrated by the flow of new customers into your business and you're looking for answers as to why that is, let's look at how you approach new customers with your marketing message. See if you can relate to this. Have you ever had a frustrated friend turn to you for advice after a failed relationship? I have, primarily females, because guys don't talk to other guys about this. And so the frustrated friend, with a big sigh and an air of resignation about the direction of their life, I'll always be alone, they want to know how to find the right guy. If there, of course, is still one left available out there, because they're obviously all gone. And I tell them, it's easy. You simply make a list of all the qualities you want in a guy, and then compare every guy that comes along with the qualities on that list. If he doesn't match the qualities on that list, you don't even go out on a date with that guy. You sit down with her, you make that list, and it goes something like this. Honest, trustworthy, dependable, hardworking, a gentleman, has a good job, loves his mom, etc., etc., etc. You and she then look at this list and you feel like you've done the right thing, and you send your friend on her way believing you've done the world a favor and you've saved her from a life of heartache and done your part to make the world a better place. And then, 1 week later, she's fallen for a guy who maybe has one of those qualities from the list, and to your shocking surprise, she's actually paid no attention to the list when she met this guy. And her answer to your why is, well, something like, he looked hot in his jeans, or he made me laugh, or we just connected. So much for a list of qualities. And isn't this exactly how it happens in the world of buying things, of doing business, of getting customers? You write out your list of qualities, everything you think, strike that, everything you know customers want in your service, you create your marketing message, and you tell them that's what you offer. And then they choose someone else, a competing business that looks hot in a pair of blue jeans. You scream, where have all the good customers gone? Are there any left out there? So what do? You rewrite your list. You add even more qualities. You announce special incentives if new customers will just go out with you one time and see how wonderful you are. And maybe you get a few new customers, but few that are looking for long-term partners. My entrepreneurial friends, you need some help. Your courtship line needs some work. Your marketing message is your courtship message. And I think it's the main reason why potential customers will even choose to give you a first date. Back in 2005, Will Smith starred as a date doctor in the movie Hitch. He promised that he could get you a date with any woman and make her fall for you in just 3 dates. So for Chapter 5 of the Marketing Plan Podcast, let's see if we can put a little hitch into your marketing message. Message hitch number one. In the movie, Hitch says, one dance, one look, one kiss. That's all we get. Just one shot to make the difference between happily ever after and, oh, he's just some guy I went to something with once. The first time you talk to someone, the first time you give your pitch, you are setting the expectations of the relationship. You're also opening up the door to possibility. Most marketing messages were created to sell right here, right now. It's like asking for a kiss the very first time you walk up and talk to a potential mate. Famous ad copywriter Joe Sugarman said in his book, Advertising Secrets of the Written Word, that the purpose of the first sentence in a line of ad copy is to get the reader to read the second sentence. The objective of your marketing message is to get the potential customer interested in your second message. It's about getting them intrigued. You don't want to let them know how self-centered you are. You want to let them know that you look hot in a pair of jeans. So use your marketing message to set an expectation of what a relationship with your business might be like. What's the first thing customers hear from you? How great you are? How cheap you are? Car dealers are the worst, right? Coincidentally, that's why their marketing messages are also the least trusted out there. Hello, I just met you. Kiss me right now. So your marketing message should be a bit intriguing. It should beckon the potential customer to want to read your second sentence, to get to know more about you. What you can take away from this is two things. Your message should have a personality, and you don't have to cram your marketing message with every piece of possible boastful information about your business. Message hitch number two. Sarah, played by Eva Mendes in the movie, says to Hitch, "Sometimes it's really hard to see the forest through the sleaze." Or, "Sometimes you can't see the brand's promise through the features and benefits." Let's realize that people do not, and I repeat, do not buy you based on your features and benefits, nor your hype or deals and discounts. That makes you a sleazy used car salesman. Remember the concept of the brand promise we discussed in Chapter 2? Your brand's promise is what you promise to deliver to the customer beyond the product or service that you happen to sell. Your marketing message should promise something that's of value, something like empowerment, productivity, peace of mind, confidence, fun, hope. So here's what you can take away from this. Review your marketing message and see if you make a promise. And it can be implied, it doesn't have to be overt. But it's a promise that's beyond features and benefits. It's also beyond abstract, meaningless boasting. Let me give you a quick example. Here are two real-life actual businesses. Of course, I'm going to leave off the names. These two companies are real estate investment firms. So the first says, and this is a quote, "We are an innovative private equity real estate firm focused on providing equity capital to middle market operating sponsors in dynamic, supply-constrained submarkets throughout the United States. We have completed more than 153 transactions, representing assets totaling more than $5 billion. Okay, that's number one. The second business, a very similar business, this is what they say in their message. "It's surprising how difficult things can be when they don't need to be. Take an investment real estate deal, for example. With two willing parties, why does it seem to be so hard to get things done? We take care of all those little details that hold up deals. We refuse to let anything get in the way. We get the deal done." You see the difference? The first is a list of boastful babble. The second is a business putting on its sexy pair of blue jeans with a promise to get the deal done. Message hitch number three. In the movie, Hitch says, "No guile, no gain, no girl." And guile means cleverness. And many people in the marketing industry call this creativity. But I think that's a scary word and one that makes things more difficult than they need to be. Why is guile important? Ask yourself, how great is your product? Does it really matter if no one cares? Or maybe I should say, if no one cares to hear about it? Unfortunately, the value of your service is judged by the creativity. Strike that. It's judged by the delivery of your pitch. What that means is the more standardized your message is, the less value is placed on your service. The more boring your message, the more likely it is that your product will have a lower perceived value. It's called the anchor principle. And what that means is the first contact anyone has with your brand is like an anchor, and all future contact with your business is judged by that first contact. Approach people with no personality, with no guile, and you will be judged as boring. maybe a nice guy, but probably not relationship material. But we as business owners like to believe that our service is judged carefully and objectively by its merit. That's why we present so many features and benefits, but it's simply not true. People don't have the time to weigh everyone's features and benefits. They like to quickly put everything into a neat little box using their intuition. And these little boxes are groups based on qualities rather than features, benefits, and price. Perceived value is often the product of the presentation of your message. In fact, people have a defense mechanism for boring, undifferentiated messages. It's called disregard. That's right. Any message that follows a typical formula of features, benefits, and price gets ignored. This is really important. In fact, rule number 4 in Brain Rules by brain scientist John Medina says, and I quote, "We don't pay attention to boring things." The cure, Medina says, is to find a way to arouse and then hold someone's attention. You do that by being different. As Chip and Dan Heath told us in Made to Stick, you do that by breaking people's guessing machine. Before you say something, a person's subconscious guesses what you're going to say. If it guesses right, it channels your marketing message in one ear and out the other of your potential customer, never touching their consciousness. But if you use some cleverness, some guile, you're using a different pattern and the subconscious says, "Whoa," and it alerts the conscious mind to pay attention. Then people will hear your personality and your promise. So you have to be unexpected, and unexpected means unfamiliar. A huge mistake that businesses make is that they use the same standard imagery that the entire industry uses. Luke Sullivan, who we will hear from shortly, says in his book, Hey Whipple, Squeeze This, that you should learn the overused iconography or imagery of your industry and avoid it. In the real estate industry, I think every single company uses a roof or some frame house in their logo and all their messages. Don't do that. So you can sum up the 3 marketing message hitches with this framework for creating your own personal marketing message. It's first, give people your personality. Second, add your brand's promise. Third, be clever and say something that's unexpected. You must be cleverly unexpected to get their attention. You must have a personality for people to be interested in you. And you must offer an implied promise if you want people to believe a relationship with you would have some value. And that brings us to Chapter 5's guest marketer segment, and there are actually 2 marketers. That's right, an additional marketer for no additional charge. Now you see why we gave you 2 quotes. And we're going to focus on the guile part of your message, being clever, what marketers call creativity. I went back to the archives for 2 guys that were in my Power to the Small Business podcast. And they both talk about messaging and creativity. I've edited the segments to remove the advertising-related material to just focus on the message. So the first guest is Luke Sullivan, who is chair of advertising at the Savannah College of Art and Design, and he's author of the classic book on creating great ads, Hey Whipple, Squeeze This.
What's the creative process? How do you come up with that idea? What's that creative process? How do you do that?
I sit down, me, I've been doing the business now 32 years. And this, after talking to the client, after talking to the people who are asking me to do the work, after understanding fully what it is they want, after understanding fully what it is they do, after understanding fully who their target is, after understanding fully who their competition is, try to figure out a way to figure out what they have that people want that the competition isn't giving them. Once you know that stuff, once you have that true north in your compass, you've got a direction. I need to do this. This is my strategy. My strategy is X. Now, that's not the creative process. You just asked me about the creative process, but it can't begin without that. Once that's solved, yes, then things get squishy. Then there's about 58 roads you can take from that point. I personally, I like to sit down and I like to draw a little white square on a piece of paper. I don't like the concept to create advertising in front of a computer. I don't think you should. I think that's where you finish ideas. I think you sit down with a pad of paper and a pencil and you face a wall. Don't face the beautiful forest outside your cabin window or wherever the heck you're at. No, you need to turn inwards. So I try to find a little office with nothing much in it, and I put my feet up, and I try to get comfortable, and I try to do it in the morning when we have our best brains in the morning. And I draw a little square, and I try to fill that square with something interesting. And that's the best way I can put it. If it's a little white square, that square could be a TV frame, it could be a banner ad, it could be a radio spot, it doesn't matter. What that is I'm trying to focus all the stuff that I've thought about this client. I try to burn it down to a single idea that is interesting, so that somebody who sees the idea stops, leans in and goes, what is this? Now, maybe it's a visual, maybe it's a radio spot, maybe it's a website, maybe it's a business idea, maybe it's a movement, whatever it is. I figure if you can't get your idea into that little white square, it's not a very big idea.
It doesn't take a genius with keen observation powers to watch TV and to listen to radio and see that a lot of advertising just doesn't have that little white square, right? It's treated more as a recitation, an announcement of several facts and figures and benefits strung together. This creativity that we're searching for, is it necessary? How important is it to have some sort of creativity or some kind of novel idea or approach?
It is not required. It really isn't required, but that means all the weight goes onto your product. Starbucks never did a single ad. They just didn't. They had a unique experience and a product unlike any other, and it simply grew by word of mouth. When you have a product, I think the day that cancer is cured, they do not have to run an ad about that. It's a product that everybody's going to love, everybody wants, and they could put a little classified ad in the Topeka Bugle, and the world's going to find out about it. Now, when you don't have a great product, a breakthrough product, well then, yeah, maybe you are going to need to align some marketing in your favor to help beat the other guys. And yes, then I do think creativity is probably the best business tool you have to, as my old boss used to say, to unfairly beat the competition is with creativity. And the reason why it's unfair is that not everybody is creative, and not all agencies really are creative. And it's unfair. I mean, God gives us talents, different things. He's a great teacher. He's a great educator. He's a good policeman. Creativity is not everybody's creative. I don't care what these gurus say. Oh, we're all creative in our own ways. No, I don't think so. I think certain people are great storytellers. Certain people are great designers, et cetera, et cetera. So when you align yourself with a really good creative team or with an agency, a small agency, I don't care how big, as long as it's creative, you are going to have an unfair advantage over the competition who's going to do things the safe way.
So creativity is a fairly abstract word. When we're talking about creativity, I mean, we can be creative in an ad, but maybe we don't want to be creative for creative sake. What's the right form of creativity for advertising? What are you talking about there?
A guy named Bill Birnbach, famous ad guy from Dole Dane Birnbach, just the original genius, once said, I would not turn a man upside down in an ad to be creative. But if it were to show that the change doesn't fall out of the pockets of these new genes, well, then I would do that. So that is a great illustration of creativity needs to be in service of a commercial purpose. If it's just creativity for creativity's sake, well, it's just art. You know, put it on a ponytail and go to the art studios and be an artist, but that's not advertising. So creativity applied to as almost a lever at a key marketing place can really be powerful, because not everybody can wield it.
Well, you just mentioned rules here, and I pulled a few. I don't know if you'd call them rules or guidelines or what. I pulled a few of them from your book. By the way, we're talking with Luke Sullivan. He's author of Hey Whipple, Squeeze This: A Guide to Creating Great Advertising. One of the things you say in your book was, and I actually have read your book, Luke. It's a great book. It says, you say, never show what you are saving, never say what you are showing.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Kind of an old rule. When you have a good ad going. Let's just talk about a print ad. When you have a good print ad, what you want is reader involvement. You want the reader to lean into your ad. You want your reader to finish the thought for you. When you spell everything out in an ad, you might as well just write a spec sheet. A spec sheet is not an ad. A spec sheet has all the information about the product on it, but it's not very interesting. So in order to make something interesting, you have to involve the reader. You have to assume that they, too, are very smart and that if you treat them smart, they're going to lean into your ad and say, oh, I get that. So typically, let's say you have a big, bold headline that just says everything very crisply, very cleverly. You don't need to then show a visual of that same thing or to gild the lily or over-art direct that thing. Let the headline do all the heavy lifting. It's done. You may not need a visual at all. Or on the other hand, if you have a really interesting visual that kind of spells out, let's say that these shirts don't need ironing and your visual just spells it out perfectly, do you really need to have a headline in there that says this shirt doesn't need ironing? Well, that locks the reader out. The reader doesn't have any reason to be involved in the ad. But when the visual does it and invites the reader in to lean in to look at this thing, oh, this shirt doesn't need ironing. I get it. It's involving, and it allows this little aha moment in the reader's mind that I think is just more engaging than handing them a spec sheet.
You let them finish it for you.
Yes.
So, Luke, another thing that you talk about in the book is that customers never go shopping for full lines of products. And I think this is a common mistake that local businesses make with their advertising is they think they have to tell everything.
I never have, Jay. Have you ever gotten in the car and said, you know what, I need to go buy the big one, the little one, the middle-sized one, the one that goes fast, the one that goes slow. I need to buy the blue, the red, the green. I need to buy the sharp and the dull version. We don't. We have a need. Oh, I need quarter-inch holes, or I need a toaster, and we go get that thing. Now, I don't blame advertisers for wanting to pack so much into their ad. The deal is they're very close to their products, and they understand how great their products are. I mean, that's why they went into business. I have this cool thing, and it goes faster than the other guys, and it comes in all these different colors more than the other guys, and it's wireless, and about 50 other great things about this product. And I want to shriek that from the rooftops. So don't tell me, Mr. Ad Guy, that I can't do that. Well, the deal is you have every right to do that, and it's your money, and go right ahead. Put it all in the ad, and you have to let them do that because it's their money. The deal is, though, if you will find a good creative person who's done this for a while, and if you will trust them to keep your best interests in mind, because that's what they do. They want you to succeed, and you'll come use them again. You will let them decide what is the most important thing for me to say. I've got this, let's say I've just got this one newspaper ad, it's going to run this one time. I seem to have, it's a half-page ad, that's pretty big, let's put all the stuff in there. A good advertising person is going to tell you, no, don't put all the stuff in there, I don't care that it goes fast, there's all these colors and different flavors. You need to figure out the one thing that you can tell your best customer that will get them to lean in and talk about your product. The deal is, they can't put money on the newspaper ad and buy it right there. Eventually, they're going to have to go to your website, they're going to have to walk through your door, and that's where you do start to tell them all the details. That's a showroom kind of, a floor kind of discussion. But when you try to pack all that stuff into the very first minute you've met somebody, that's a little bit much. As if it was a party you walked into, and your customer walks into the party, and you run up to them and you tell them, oh, you should go out with me. I went to this college, and I have this much money, and 85 other great things about me, versus letting them come up to you and telling them one delicious, marvelous fact that you is probably something they're looking for. That's the way to go. That's how to introduce yourself to people, is with a singular focus and not try to solve all their problems, because you can't.
That's Luke Sullivan, author of Hey Whipple, Squeeze This. Our second guest marketer is Tom Altsteel. He's the owner of PKA Marketing in Milwaukee, and he's the author of Advertising Creative, Strategy, Copy, and Design. Here's Tom Altsteel.
Creativity in advertising, Do you need to be creative in advertising in order for it to be effective?
Well, I think that's why we're really in the business. You need to present ideas in a fresh way so they'll be more memorable. And the benefit of that is you're able to spend less to get your message out. For example, Aflac, they spend a lot of money, but not as much as they would need to because they did something very creative with the duck, and that's taken on a life of its own. They're able to get their message out with a much lower media budget than they would if they were just tackling a dry subject like supplemental insurance.
So creativity, I hear you saying, it really extends your budget or it maximizes the budget that you do spend on marketing and advertising.
Yeah, very much. It does several things. It builds your brand, creates long-term awareness, and it really has to do three things. It has to be unexpected. It has to be something presenting the familiar in a new and a different way. Second, it has to be relevant. It has to resonate with your intended target audience. So it has to have some meaning or else it's not creative. Third, it has to be strategic. It has to be able to use in part of a campaign. You can come up with one brilliant idea, but if you can't extend it beyond that one application, then it's not a good use of creative strategy. So it is very important and necessary.
You brought up the Aflac example, mm-hmm. and it's a great one, I think, and maybe that's why you brought it up, because they're creative, but it doesn't detract from their message in that you know that Aflac is about supplemental insurance. The message does not get lost in the creativity.
Yeah, and I think if you stick with the insurance analogy, you can look at Geico, where sometimes the creative does get lost. I mean, they're very, very creative ads, but sometimes the message gets lost in the creativity. But they also have a humongous media budget, so the brand is certainly established. That's a case where they're very creative spots, but they need billions of dollars of support to get that message out.
Now that we've answered the question, is creativity good or necessary? Let's answer the question, what is really creativity when you're marketing? I mean, define it for me. How do you know if you're really being creative?
Most of all, it's presenting ideas in a new way, you know, a way that most people don't expect. It's not about the most elegant design or the best written copy or high production values. It's creating something that people can relate to, that resonates with people and becomes more memorable. How do you know if you got a good creative idea? A lot of it is just a personal gut check. If you have the luxury of time and you can look back on what you've done a couple days later and you can still say, wow, that's good, your basic instinct tells you that it's good. Then you show it around and you show it to other people. If they get the same reaction, you may be around to something. But finally, ultimately, the market decides if it's good creative. If it gets attention, if it resonates with the target, if it motivates someone to take action, then it's a great idea. And I guess go back to the old saying, it's not creative unless it sells something.
Well, expand on this for me, if you would. The purpose of creativity is really so that you can stand out. There are so many messages out there. We have to stand out.
Yeah, very much. You got to pull yourself out of the pack. The ultimate goal is to sell something, but I would say the value of creativity is bringing people to the door. In a business-to-business setting, you know, we can get people to take action, but the salesperson, or in retail too, has to close the deal.
Can you give us maybe some guidelines on what to stay away from as far as creativity? Like, a lot of the big advertisers like to use humor. You know, mm-hmm. let's use humor to be creative, or entertaining to be creative. Then you go back to the Aflac. What is Aflac? Is it humor? It's somewhat humor. I don't know. So what are some good guidelines for bad and good creativity?
Again, something that resonates. Now, humor works in a lot of cases. It gets people to like your brand or like your commercial. It doesn't necessarily get them to buy something. And if the objective is just brand recognition, I think humor is an excellent choice. humor, if it can be tied to a benefit of the product, very effective. But to be funny for funny's sake doesn't always work. So what does work? I'd say any approach that really connects with people. It could be drama. It could be something that demonstrates the product very well. It doesn't have to be funny. I mean, if you go back to the old Timex commercials back, you know, decades ago, where they do product demonstrations and the torture test, there was nothing funny about those, but it sure did make a case that the watch, you know, takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Let's get into a little deeper on whether or not you even need creativity, because I look at some very effective campaigns, and maybe you can tell me, maybe there's some creativity there that I don't see. Like, for example, the U.S. Marine Corps' TV spots, which I think are very effective, and the Marines are one of my favorite brands. But you could argue, is there really any creativity there, and do all brands need creativity to be effective?
I think there has to be some level of creativity. Otherwise, the creativity is sort of a shortcut that allows you to get attention without having to maybe pay as much. If you had a boring message or something that didn't resonate, you would have to spend a lot more money just to get people's attention. So getting back to what the purpose of creativity is, it grabs people. You got to have the right creativity that connects with people. But if you can do that, you've got their attention and you're telling them something that they want to hear, at least pay attention to. You don't have to spend as much to get that attention. Now, having said that, the internet and social media is the great equalizer for small budgets and small business.
But you still have to give your message, no matter what platform you use. You still have to give your message in a creative way. It has to be something that's out of the ordinary or unexpected to some degree, right?
Yes. And getting back to those three things, if it's unexpected, so, wow, that's something I haven't seen before. It's relevant. Yeah, I can relate to that. Or you're speaking to me. Or I really get what you're saying. And is it strategic? I mean, will it generate some action? And can you use that message across several platforms? Then you've got something that's worthwhile from a creative standpoint.
Let's get down to idea generation here. Let's think mostly like on a local level or a small to medium-sized business level where we don't have a big production budget to do a lot of special effects or hire comedy writers or something like that. How can we generate good creative ideas for our advertising and promotional efforts?
It comes down to knowing the marketplace and knowing your target audience. You keep asking, so what? You try to boil down to the big idea, that one thing. Don't get lost in the features. Don't get lost in the ego of your company. Find out what does it mean for your customer and why do they buy something or why should they buy something. And you finally get down to that little kernel of truth, and then you've got something you can work with. It's not so much, you know, all the things that a company wants to say about their product. It's what that product does for a person. And once you get that defined and you keep asking, so what, then you've got a basis that you can do something that's relevant to that customer.
We're talking to Tom Altsteel. He is VP and Creative Director and partner at PKA Marketing in Milwaukee. So, Tom, what are some techniques you might recommend in generating creative ideas?
Whether you're doing it in-house or you have an agency, you have to go out in the field and talk to customers. You can do a lot of secondary research, but I think there's no substitute for just talking to the people that use the product or the people that don't use it. You know, and if it's retail, why do you shop at this store and why don't you shop at this store? And you get a lot of answers that way. You know, so doing your primary research, thoroughly getting in the head of the target audience, I think the first thing and the most essential thing you need to do.
Links and show notes, of course, can be found at the website marketingplanpodcast.com/chapter 5. So what I've done with the first 5 chapters of this show is take you on a broad survey of the important elements of a marketing plan, that are based on the four essential spots of marketing, what I call the marketing circle of life for independent businesses. Now, what I plan to do with each successive round of chapters, and they will go in groups of five, is to get deeper into the concepts of marketing and using them to create a marketing plan. And I'll also start sharing a few more resources and downloads. And I've just finished a guided virtual workshop with a small group of entrepreneurs, a course on how to create a marketing plan for an independent business. And I recorded everything. So I'm in the process of polishing it up. And this summer, I'll make it available on demand to anyone. You'll hear the announcement right here on the podcast when that happens. But if you want, you can go to my company website and register to receive my email updates. And to do so, just go to themarketingspot.com/email. And of course, you can also subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, or other podcast listening apps. Coming soon, our very own Android and Apple apps. But for this week, why not use the three-hitch framework for your marketing message and see if you can rework it? And I appreciate it. If you want to share it with me, please do. My email address is jay, that's J-A-Y, at themarketingspot.com. So let's do this. Hop on board the Marketing Plan Podcast, and together, let's make a plan to get to point C.
All the stuff we just talked about, it's on the web at marketingplanpodcast.com.